If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Irrational Fear!
Don't forget to unplug your set.
Hello, Australia. That's right. You are listening to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn Jameson. Today, we are talking with podcast royalty. A lot of you would have known that intro music from a podcast called A Rational Fear. Today, I've got the host, the founder, the all-around good guy, Dan Illich. Welcome to My Millennial Money.
Glenn James, it's great to be with you in the My Millennial Money studios here. What could be termed the Hollywood Heights of Newcastle?
You could say the Hollywood Heights. Lots of boomers, lots of old money.
Yeah, and lots of people wandering around asking me for 10 cents because they need to get a hit. I love it. I love it. It's a good vibe.
So welcome to My Millennial Money. You're a long-time listener yourself.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, and I have listened to My Millennial probably since the beginning. I came back from America in 2018 and I had about 15 grand to my name. And it was then I decided I would get serious about getting my money in order. I had about 40 grand worth of super and I was an old person in their late 30s going, what the fuck am I doing?
And when you want to get your act together, who do you turn to?
Well, I turn to My Millennial Money. Foolishly, I turn to My Millennial Money.
I always say to people who have listened for a long time, firstly, my apologies. But no, I want to thank GlobalX, our show partner to My Millennial Money. You'll hear a bit about GlobalX every single Thursday. We're so thankful for show partners because they help bring the show to you. So GlobalX, they provide ETFs. They're domiciled in Australia, which is really important. GlobalX is formerly ETF Securities, and they've got a variety of different thematic ETFs that you can add to your investment portfolio. To learn more, you can head to globalxetfs.com.au. Thanks, GlobalX. For those who know, you know. But for those who don't, Dan, your podcast, Irrational Fear, it is an award-winning podcast. The last 3 years, you've won Comedy Podcast of the Year.
Glenn, I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's right. A lot of people ask me, they say, Dan, do you have an award-winning podcast? I say, yes, I do. Thank you for bringing it up. And Irrational Fear, we won the best comedy at the Australian Podcast Awards the last 3 years in a row. I think it's because, you know, quite frankly, you know, Hamish and Andy need to step it up a little bit. Tony Martin, you know, he's getting a bit old in the tooth. And, you know, Tony and Ryan, sure, they got $5 million from Spotify, but do they have a little glass trophies from the Podcast Awards? No.
They don't. Yeah.
They don't.
Hey, I wasn't at the Podcast Awards last year because that's when I was getting my ankle operated on in November.
Yeah.
Now, Simo Interactive, we actually won the Best Publisher Award after SBS.
That is, you got silver?
We got silver.
Well done.
Well, it's funny because
What they need is an award for best independent publisher.
And best everything else.
And who has an extraordinarily good lifestyle business.
Yes. Yeah. Like, there was six people in the category, five independent and one SBS. I was just like, what?
Yeah, SBS shouldn't be in that.
No. Anyway.
They suck off the government's teat.
So Simo Interactive, best publisher in Australia after SBS.
Yeah, you're going to put that on the sticker. Put that on your next book.
Yeah, we might do that. So we are doing a My Money story with Dan. Before we get into that, jump over and hit subscribe, hit follow to Irrational Fear. We'll talk about your podcast a little bit later in the episode, sure. But it is a current affairs, comedy, news, activist, woke. I've got to have purple hair to listen. Like what?
No, we just bring comedians and experts to rip into the news and drill down on climate change. That's kind of the whole show, Irrational Fear, was built around the premise that the media is making us scared of things, but they tend to make us scared of all the wrong things. So back when we started it 10 years ago, no one was talking about climate change in the media. So we wanted to have a comedy podcast that spoke a little bit about climate change.
Yeah.
So we called it Irrational Fear, almost like a parody of A Current Affair. And so that's when we started it. And 10 years ago in a pub in Sydney, we were streaming over FBI radio at the time, live from that pub. And then we went from podcast to broadcast on FBI, to broadcast on Radio National. And then I went overseas for a few years and then came back and really hit the podcast hard when I came back. It's been a fun journey, yeah. So, yeah, if you like your news, you like it delivered funny, and you like smart, funny people in your ear nattering about all things politics and climate change, have a listen. It's good fun.
Mm. And I will do a correction. I actually like purple hair. I love seeing colour in hair.
Can I say my partner said to me, she said, you know, back in 2014, I found this out. We're recording this today on Valentine's Day. Oh, the day after Valentine's Day. She said to me yesterday, she said, you know, before we were dating, I think in 2013, I swiped right on you on Tinder, but you didn't swipe right on me. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And she said, well, I did have purple hair at the time. I said, well, that's probably why I didn't swipe
right. Wow. How did you end up meeting then?
We met on Bumble in 2018. Yeah. 5 years after.
We won't talk about anyway. Let's move on. So these episodes, as you know, we talk with everyday people about their money story, primarily listeners of My Millennial Money. They don't have to be listeners. I get a variety of different guests on. But Dan, I don't know how we're going to get into this, but generally speaking, and maybe if you want to pick up, you can talk about your childhood if you want. You can talk about, you know, coming back from America, that moment in your life in 18 where you had to press reset, what were you doing the first kind of into your 20s and early 30s? Were you just flapping around?
I was. I didn't really have much of a thought about money. Mm. My whole thing was really driving my career. I was like, I'm going to work on being a comedian. I'm going to be a great TV kind of comedian. I'm going to get a TV show. Once I get that, I can put all my effort into finding how to use the money that I earn.
Yeah.
But turns out TV in Australia doesn't actually pay you a lot of money. Mm. And I was on plenty of TV shows as a kid, but not earning money, like real money that anyone with a job would consider today as great money. Mm. And those gigs on TV, they last, you know, you see someone on TV, you think they're famous, you think they're rich. But often if someone's working on a TV show, they work on a TV show for 13 weeks and then it could be years between the next gig. And that's the kind of life I was living. So I had my first gig in 2006 and then...
What doing?
I did a show called The Ronnie Johns Half Hour on Channel 10. It was like...
Never heard of it.
It was a sketch comedy show, a very cult sketch comedy show on Channel 10. You may know of Heath Franklin's Chopper. He does a character pretending to be... Uncle Chop Chop.
Yep.
That came from our show.
Right.
And then after that, I kind of directed a few TV shows, but it took until 2009 before I was back on telly again when I did Hungry Beast. And then I did Hungry Beast on the ABC, 09, 010, 011, and then did a show called Can of Worms on Channel 10 from about 011 till 12. And then ended up moving to America to find a gig. And I got a gig at Al Jazeera for a year and then came back to Australia and then went back over to America to got another gig working at another network over there. So it took me out of the country to find another gig. You know, like it's one of those things where I love comedy. I love kind of satire. I love the intersection between comedy, entertainment and saying something about the world. Mm. And I had to leave the country to go and find those opportunities and didn't quite kind of crack it there in a big enough way to kind of stay buoyant, came back to Australia pretty broke. Mm. I was in a tricky relationship in LA with somebody I didn't enjoy being with. So I'd been made redundant and I looked at my bank account and I was like running down the clock on my bank account so I could leave.
Wow.
To come back. So I came back and really hit the ground running and took over a TV show in Australia called Tonightly with Tom Ballard. So I started running that. So I was the boss of that show for a year. Mm. And that was great.
Well, that would have been some good consistent income then.
It was good for a year. Yeah. I'd never been on a show which lasted more than 13 weeks prior because that's just the way TV works in Australia. Like 13 weeks and you're done and if you get recommissioned, that's great. You get another 13. But this was a show that was on every night for a year. So that was great and that allowed me to kind of take a breath and then work on the next thing. And the next thing happened to be being sponsored for my podcast. Mm. And that was lucky. So I got a fellowship for 2 years and that paid for the podcast for 2 years.
Wow.
And it meant I could really accelerate the podcast and the podcast grew and the Patreon from that grew. And then the podcast has such energy around it now that, you know, it's a pretty small podcast, you know, 6 to 10,000 listeners. But people stop me in the street and want to talk about it. People, you know, messaging me out of the blue wanting to know more information about this topic or get this guest on. And that's really, really fun engagement.
Are you sick of people saying, get Glenn James on the podcast? Just get him on there.
Oh, we need to talk about interest rates.
Interest rates.
Oh, God, we need to talk about ETFs.
So, yeah, well, it's all well and good. But if I do go there, growing up, what was childhood like? What was family life like?
You know, I had a pretty lucky life. My family's quite unique. Every family's unique. My family is unique in the way that my father was quadriplegic, is quadriplegic, still alive, and my mum looked after him all of our life, but also mum had four boys to look after as well. So that was the unique aspect about it. But to me, it wasn't anything different. Like, it was, I didn't know if I was missing out on anything because Dad was pretty good and he was a lawyer and he ran his small business from home. And seeing mum and Dad run that business was kind of, I guess, comforting for me because I run a small business myself. I run a small podcast business.
What was the nature of Dad's injury?
When he was 21, he was in a training accident with the Army. He was in the Army Reserves. And he was in a training accident in Lithgow and he was in a convoy with one truck rolled over and the truck behind them rolled over and the next truck came along and ran over everyone who fell out of that second truck. And the Dad was in that second truck. So everyone who was in that accident with Dad has long since passed and Dad's like the only one that's still going.
Gosh.
And I think that's due to Mum. And so Mum and Dad met when Dad was in hospital at Concord Hospital, at the repatriation hospital.
You mean All Saints?
Yes, at the All Saints Hospital.
Thank you.
My friend Virginia Gay, who works at All Saints Hospital, she would recognise that place too. Yes, in Concord Hospital, and Mum was a nurse on that level, and Dad chatted up Mum, and then they fell in love. And
we'll let the professional ethics issues slide there with Mum.
Yeah, just this once.
Just this once.
Yeah, statute of limitations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Mum should sue.
Yeah. Now, like, growing up with Dad being in a wheelchair effectively, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, for a large part
of
my life he was in a wheelchair, probably from when I was about 14. He could walk. He was a partial quad, so he could walk in the 80s with a wall or with someone. And then for convenience, he started using a gopher, like an electric wheelchair scooter. And then he was darting around the city on a gopher and then gradually his mobility got less and less. So that old adage, if you want to keep moving it, you've got to keep moving it, you know.
Which we could all learn from.
Which we could all learn from, yeah. So sure, Dad was getting older, but so moving to the chair was the thing that probably sped his decline up, you know.
So question, like, growing up with a parent who has a disability, did that shape your view of the world in the activist? Because you're an activist at heart or as a hobby, or like there is something there that you want to stand up for something because that thing, that issue, that person, I don't know. Like, do you get what I'm saying? Did it?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel weird about, I don't know. I don't define myself as an activist.
Right.
But I define myself as a comedian.
But give me a microphone and I'll tell you what I think about something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's how I, that's kind of how I operate. But yeah, I don't know. I guess so. Dad, I think more than anything, Dad being a solicitor was what turned my eye to justice, and also my mum, heavily involved in charities and St. Vincent de Paul and things like that. So as a kid, Dad would have lots of people come through his office, which was our home, of all walks of life, and Dad would be up all night helping them do stuff, navigate Australia, particularly immigrants like from Iran and Vietnam and Yugoslavia, where Dad's parents are from, particularly in the 90s. And you'd have all these strange people come through the house and they would be his clients that he would look after for a cheap rate as opposed to his other clients. And fascinating, these people who'd come out to Australia to make a new life. And I think Dad, as an immigrant himself, a post-war immigrant himself, kind of saw that opportunity to kind of help these people navigate their way through Australia.
Well, probably seeing and hear, like seeing those people, one, hearing the stories that Dad would say would have an impact hugely.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I mean, like, because, you know, me starting this podcast in 2018, I'm talking to people almost on a weekly basis that if I didn't do the podcast, I wouldn't be talking with an immigrant from wherever, or I wouldn't be talking to people who are going through adversity that I wouldn't go through. So categorically, and thank the Lord that some of the early episodes don't appear anywhere anymore, like I'm a different person because of the experience that I've had with other people.
Yeah. I think that is correct, yeah. And I think also when through mum and dad, their sense of values has meant if something is fucked, I need to go, oh, that's fucked.
Mm.
And when stuff is fucked, we need to just call it out.
Mm.
And I kind of had a moment in 2019. I went to this Obama Foundation leadership conference in Kuala Lumpur.
Are you seeing Barack when he comes to Sydney?
It's very expensive. It's like $1,500.
I know. I thought, $1,000 a ticket.
I'm not going to pay. I've seen him talk before.
Yeah.
I've been in the same room as Barack Obama. No big deal.
Your LinkedIn says I've shared the stage.
Well, I mean, I was in the audience and I saw the stage. Yeah. It's a shared experience.
I was at the tennis with Bill Gates. We've been in the same at the same event. My LinkedIn says the same event as Bill Gates. Anyway, sorry.
And I think my activist kind of brain switched on at that event because I went to this great corporate training event about power and how we all have power and the 9 different types of power we can use to get things done. And it was a real aha moment where the convener, Tong Yi, just gave this incredible – he's a Singaporean corporate trainer. He's a real gun, really lovely guy, super vulnerable, very smart and funny gentleman. Just unlocked these 9 things and it's like, oh, fuck, like we're all pretty powerful in our own right. We just don't know how to use our power in a way to be effective. And so some folks may know me from putting billboards in New York City last year.
Yeah, talk to us about that.
It's shaming Australia's climate change. So coming up to COP26 in Glasgow, the big climate talks, I'd been following climate change for a long time. I'd went to the Paris climate talks. I worked there for 2 weeks doing shows out of there and I'd been following climate for a long time. And at this point, Scott Morrison wasn't going to go to Glasgow, which I thought was a real travesty because like this was going to be one of the big marquee years for COP. And so I decided to buy a billboard in Glasgow for $12,000 just to put up, if I can't go to Glasgow because of COVID lockdowns and because, you know, someone in the government forgot to reply to emails from Pfizer, I thought, well, I'll buy a billboard and I'll get my audience to pay for it. And so I put up a crowdfunding page and encouraged my audience to pay, you know, $12,000 to help me get these 3 billboards up in Glasgow. And I hit go on the campaign at 6 a.m. The day I put it up, and then 8 a.m., I got $12,000.
Wow.
And the money kept rolling in. And it was so astonishing. And I wouldn't have done that had I not been at that conference, you know, 6 months before learning about how to use my own power.
Refresh my, because I absolutely remember this before we kind of knew each other even. Like it was the burning with the kangaroo?
Yeah,
or
I had a kangaroo burning and it said Australia net zero by 2300.
Yeah.
And I thought that'd be really funny because, you know, the catchphrase is net zero by 2030. People might think it's a typo, but the reality is it's got a kangaroo burning. So, you know, these billboards weren't for anyone to take seriously. They were for people in Glasgow to laugh at Australia because Australia has this reputation as a worldwide pariah when it comes to climate action. We're up there with Russia and Saudi Arabia as the worst actors at these climate talks because we make our money off fossil fuels. You know, it's a huge export for us.
You mean black gold?
Black gold, yeah. But as a result, we are like the second largest exporter of emissions in the world. So like we talk a big game when it comes to the environment, but realistically we're one of the worst because you know, it's that old adage, coal doesn't kill people, people kill people, and people overseas who buy our coal are killing people. So it's a strange thing where, you know, we've got to drastically, you know, what we have to do is drastically change the way we make business and make money in this country. So Scott Morrison wasn't going to go to Glasgow. So I wanted to get these billboards up to not make fun of Scott Morrison from not going, but just to point out to people in the international community that the people that represent us in Glasgow don't necessarily represent Australians' point of view. So that was the intent, was like, Scott Morrison doesn't represent us. Australians know what the fuck is going on and we're not happy about it.
Mm.
And then the money just kept rolling in. So I ended up raising $160,000, $190,000. Then I had needed more billboards and I needed bigger billboards. So I booked the biggest billboard in Times Square and we did it at dusk and I invited like 200 Australians from New York to get down to Times Square. They all RSVP'd on Facebook and they all filmed it and put it up on the internet. And, you know, Russell Crowe texted Jake Tapper to tell me to get on his show and Jake Tapper got me on his show because of Russell Crowe.
Wow.
And, it was just phenomenal, like phenomenal pressure. Like the story went everywhere, all around the world. It was in Greek TV and Serbian TV, and you know, it was on Crooked Media podcasts. And it was great to have like the Crooked Media boys talk about us applying pressure to Scott Morrison. And then Scott Morrison, 4 hours after those billboards went up, decided he was going to go to Glasgow.
Gosh.
And he said, no, we decided last night we would go.
They were always going, Dan.
We were always going to go.
Can you back off? He was always going.
We decided last night.
Yeah.
Before those billboards went up.
So you've had like some wild experiences. Like if we take it back to, you know, leaving the nest and leaving home, what was money like in your household? Was there any memory or defining moments where, like for me it was, Mum and Dad would never have a credit card. Right. You don't have the money, you don't pay for it. And that was just drilled into me.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of that. And I remember as a kid growing up asking Mum for stuff and Mum saying no. For some reason, like I remember as a kid things being really tight. And then by the time my parents sold their house, you know, my parents definitely weren't very tight. And it was like, oh, there was a real period there when we were operating on a shoestring.
Mm.
But by the time, you know, by the time where all the kids were adults, like Mum and Dad were living the good life. I assume that's just what's called being a boomer. but yeah, no, definitely like getting loans and stuff, we were kind of drilled into us that it was something we didn't do. If you didn't have the money, you definitely couldn't buy it. And for some reason, Mum was the money person because Dad never really touched money because he's like disassociated with anything to do with the business because Mum ran the business.
Right.
He did the law and Mum did the business. And Mum would always kind of poo-poo the idea of investing in the stock market and just in her comments. So I was always shy on that. I was always scared of that because I would lose money or something like that. Or she would hear somebody would invest, you know, a certain amount of money in this stock and she'd go, why would they do that, you know. But now I kind of think differently about it. And, you know, when I came back from America and I was poor, I kind of set up a whole bunch of systems that I managed my money better. Up until I came back from America, which was like my late 30s, I didn't really have a bucket system. I didn't really know where money went. Money just went into this giant pile. And I didn't have money even set aside for my tax. It was one of those things that I'd never thought about. Money just went in one account. And it just was there.
Mm.
And I just didn't even consider setting up different accounts for different things.
What's your relationship to debt?
I'm very debt averse. So I don't have any consumer debt. My partner has a home loan and I chip into that sometimes.
Is that where you're living?
No.
Okay.
It's a different house.
So you're renting where you live?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And every time I pay rent these days, I'm like, why the fuck am I paying rent? Every 2 weeks, I'm like, again? I just paid you 2 weeks ago.
It's savage, isn't it?
And so I'm kind of at the point now where I'm kind of, you know, I feel very old, Glenn. Mm. I'm 41.
Oh, you're done.
Yeah, I know. It's like, do I even bother buying a house? Like at this point, do I just, you know? So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I finally got a house deposit.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, I don't know if I...
But interesting, like you obviously live with your partner. Like how long have you been with your partner? 5 years now.
5 years, yeah.
Like there's, you know, and I'm asking on behalf of a friend, quote unquote, but like getting a partner a little bit later in life, what was that transition like from, well, I've done my own thing for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And now I'm going wholesale into this partnership. How has that been with your money values and the way that you live and all that?
Pretty good. I mean, she's a professional, so she has her assets and I've got, you know, my pile. but it's, we're pretty good at managing things.
She doesn't need you. Did you know that?
she absolutely doesn't need me.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been going through some health stuff lately, so we're putting money into that. Mm. And it's worked out, you know, it works out pretty well. Like, because I see it now as when we have to pay a big thing together, if I've got to pay it, or whoever's got the money has to, whoever's got the money can pay it at the time, it's an investment for both of us. So, yeah, it's a big mind shift. And to be honest, if she's listening to this right now, I didn't think about that probably until about 2 years into the relationship.
Right.
So now I'm investing in us now.
But that's the nature of human behavior and habit, right? Like, you can't change a habit or behavior overnight.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, when she met me, I was a complete financial mess. She took a big risk on me.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't have any debt. I just didn't have any money. That was
Like, you know, in all my rants, you know, if you get to the point, you know, I talk about like when people are in their 20s, right? If you get out of your 20s, you know, your age 29.99, almost about to tick over to 30, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you've got no consumer debt and $1 in the bank,
yeah.
And at that point you're ready to pull the trigger and start your life, quote unquote, and, you know, get serious, awesome.
Great. So I did that at 39. Yes. So I'm killing it on the Glenn James timeline.
But you imagine, and this is the whole thing with why I crap on about consumer debt, when we get to these moments of like, okay, I need to now get my life in order and all that stuff, if you want to make that decision and then you've still got consumer debt, how annoying is that? You've made this decision that I need to make this change. I'm going to do this. Oh, damn it. I can't do it for 3 years
because I've got all that debt.
Yeah, so.
And I think that's really good advice. And I think I feel very fortunate that I've been adverse to getting credit cards. Mm. The only debt that I really had in my 20s was my HEX, and I gradually paid that off. And I was fortunate enough when I bought my first car when I was 23 to get a personal loan from my family. Mm. So I could pay that off, pay my mum back for that. So I'm very fortunate when it comes to growing up to have access to money when I needed it.
Mm.
But I was also just so aware that a credit card would get me in trouble because I have a very addictive personality and I know that that would be an error on my behalf.
We are the same person.
Yeah, look, Glenn James and I have just met up and we're wearing black T-shirts, light shorts and white kicks. And
we've both had the same ankle surgery.
We just had both ankle surgery on our left ankles. We both have, some of us have, one of us has an award-winning podcast.
One of us has a Best in Australia network after SBS. No, it's good. Were there any, like, looking back at your life, even, you know, between 20 and now, so the last, what, 40 years.
Jesus.
Were there any defining aha moments for you?
Yeah, like, probably, like, only about, you know, 5 years ago did I get serious about money.
Mm.
Because I'm a sole trader, I never really managed my money correctly. I build out a spreadsheet in Google Docs. It's my income spreadsheet and I've split it into two. And so I've got a PAYG section and a invoice section. And as soon as money comes in, I look at how much money comes in and I plug it into the invoice and my spreadsheet works out where that money goes. And immediately, the aha moment for me was as soon as I get paid, I plug in how much I get paid, I move my tax to a tax, I call it folder.
Yeah.
I move my tax to a tax folder. I move my savings to a savings folder. I just move my money. Mm. Let me just bring it up. See what
yeah, do it. And while you bring that up, like Dan has the best money system in Australia because it works for him. Just have a system that works for you and your circumstances.
Yeah. So it's called my income tax calculator.
Awesome.
And it works out my tax withholding and I put it at 37%. My super, I put that at 12.5%. My savings at 15%. And then the remaining, that goes into my wages.
Mm.
So whenever I get an invoice paid, I immediately split that money up and separate it straight away. And then with PAYG, I sometimes get paid PAYG through different clients. So I have a personal project at 10%. So whatever that might be, a super at 12%, savings at 15%. mortgage at 10% and the remaining goes into my wages. So, and I've actually written out instructions on how to do it because folks, I sometimes meet.
Oh, wow. I'm looking at that. What? $5 million.
No, it's just per invoice. It's, there's no calculation there. $5 million. Mate, one of the benefits of being winning silver in the best publisher is that you make a lot of money. So you you and SBS are raking it in.
we really are.
But it's one of those things where I've actually written down instructions about what I do with each folder or what I do with each account. Because I sometimes meet folks who were like me or were like me, you know, 2018, clueless. Mm. And they're like, oh, God, I just haven't kept up with my tax. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, oh, let me copy and paste this spreadsheet for you and just do it every time. And it'll give you the structure you need. So every quarter, you're not panicking about BAS. Every year, you're not panicking about your income tax. You got the money there. You know how much you got. And you're not messing around.
You know what I like about your system? You want to know?
I assume that was rhetorical.
Well, no.
I thought I'd let it hang in the air.
No, don't let it hang. You could say, I don't care what you think, Glenn, or what you
Let's
like.
Let's try that again. Go.
I'll feed you a line. How about that?
Great.
Do you know what I like about your system?
That it's in English?
That. But secondly, as a sole trader, right, you've got no legal requirement to pay retirement savings.
That's it.
But you have chosen that I will put 12.5% aside because there are so many sole traders that eat their retirement savings.
100%. And that's what I discovered when I came back from America.
Yeah.
Was like, wow, I'd been a sole trader for 15 years, but I hadn't actually been paying myself super. Mm. So the reason why my super's kicking around at $40,000 for 10 years is because I haven't been paying myself. So I really had to supercharge my super. I'm like, in 20 years, I'm going to be dead. Well, I'm going to be retiring. Mm. I need to pump that hard. So I was lucky enough to do a few ads and stuff like that, which pay really good money. So I would.
Have you been intentional with catch up or to try and get it up to an
absolutely,
amount?
Absolutely, yeah. So like it's around 200 now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think most full-time workers in their early 40s should have around, there's no shoulds, but if you want to target everyone, maybe around that 160 to 200-ish.
That's where I'm at now. Yeah. But it's taken, like, I've taken a haircut on a lot of things to get to that point. And I don't live a big life and I rent a small pokey place.
But how funny is this in terms of the psychology of it? The fact that each time you get paid, you're just putting 12.5% aside, the year goes on and you haven't missed it.
That's it. Yeah, and you're looking after yourself in the future and that's what you need that money for.
Who's your super with?
I'm such a hypocrite. You know, I talk a lot about climate change. I talk a lot about, fossil fuels. My super is with Host Plus. They are one of the dirtier supers in Australia. I'm actually moving my super to Australian Ethical. Mm. So they are a sponsor of my show currently.
Oh, I was leading you a bone there.
So I'm actually going to move, I think, 50 grand of my super over. Interestingly, let me tell you this. Mm. If you move 50 grand of your super to an ethical super fund or a fund that doesn't invest in fossil fuels, you can actually reduce your own personal carbon footprint by about 2 tons a year.
Really?
Which is huge. So you don't have to move all your super. You can move a certain amount.
Yeah, but if you're going to move it, you wouldn't.
You just move the whole thing. Yeah, just move the whole thing.
Why don't you move your whole thing?
I'm going to.
Yeah, good. Yeah. What, you know, on Triple J when, you know, you can call Dr. Carl.
Yeah.
I want to actually know, I'm going to call Dr. Carl one day and ask, you know, like carbon offsets and all that stuff.
Yeah.
If, for example, you know, they talk about like the celebrities with their private jets.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know, just because I'm a visual learner, if I flew my private jet, I'll take you for a drive one day, a flight. I don't have a private jet. If I took a flight on a private jet for an hour, okay, Sydney to Melbourne private jet, what square meterage or football field would trees need to be to offset that and for how long? Is it 5 football fields full of trees for an hour? Like, what's the actual visual offset required? Because when I buy a flight and, you know, with Qantas or whatever.
And you pay 30 cents.
I'll pay 30 cents to save the planet. I'm annoyed because I don't bury it in the tax invoice. It's personal expense.
Separate, yeah.
But like, yeah, what's the actual thing?
Yeah.
And could Taylor Swift just buy a farm
She could.
And just have trees and go, stuff you all, I'm offsetting my flights. I'll do what I want.
Okay, here's a couple of things. So
let's have a break first and we'll come back and we'll have a rant.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, we're back. I just had to pay the light bill.
Well, here's a couple of things, right? When it comes to carbon offsets, they should be called guilt offsets.
Right.
Because all you're doing is you're absolving your own personal guilt about how many molecules you're burning to live your life. There's good carbon offsets, there's bad carbon offsets. For folks who watch Four Corners recently, they will say that there's a huge scheme which is completely fraudulent and doesn't actually do much. So when you are carbon offsetting, largely most of those carbon offsets involve what you mentioned, planting trees. And the idea is that those trees will grow, will draw down the carbon and store it in the trees. That's okay.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. That is what's called volatile carbon offsetting, because it's volatile, because I don't know if you know, Glenn, the carbon in trees can be burnt. Like the moment there's a bushfire, that carbon is released back into the atmosphere. The best way to make sure there's no carbon in the atmosphere is to not dig it up and burn it. That is the number one thing you can do.
Right.
Carbon offsetting can work if they're high quality carbon offsets. So you need to do some research to figure out if the carbon offsets you are buying are high quality or if they are just...
So some of these like tick at the checkout to offset my flight could be a somewhat greenwashing tokenism.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And it's like a...
Like I'm sure it goes somewhere and helps, but what's the impact?
Sure, it's a corporation ticking their box to say that they're sustainable, right? I wrote this piece about a major company that I did some work for over the last month. They're a big ERP software company. Basically, the company greases the wheels of capitalism in 70% of every dollar spent in the world. And at this event, they had their CEO give a wonderful speech saying, and he had this amazing gaffe. He said this. He said, "We are looking forward to working with our customers to accelerate climate change." And I thought, that is fantastic. I love that. He didn't mean to say that. He meant to say climate action or working with them to eliminate climate change, which is great. But he didn't say that. He said, accelerate climate change. And later on in the day, they had this wonderful presentation about how green this company was, followed by a wonderful presentation about how their top four companies for their cloud services include Rio Tinto, Yancoal, Santos, and Woodside Petroleum, and South 32. And so it was amazing. It's like, well, if you're saying how green your company is, and then your software is being used to accelerate the extraction, sale, and burning of fossil fuels, that's not particularly green. Here's two things you can do. You can charge a carbon premium. Give them, ask them for 10% more than you're charging your other customers, and put that discount into customers who are carbon neutral. And you could also give them a sunset timeline. Say, well, in 5 years, you're going to have to stop using our software because we can't afford to have you on the books. And anyway, they chucked a SPAC. They weren't even named in that article.
Gosh.
And they were threatening lawyers, so I took it off my LinkedIn.
Wow. Gosh.
But, you know, it didn't last very long. But it was just one of those things where the outright hypocrisy of the system means that what companies should be doing is knowing where their power lies to be able to change things for the better. So if your company does touch 70% of every dollar, then you can charge a carbon premium. And then you can give people who are, then it's like carrot and stick, right? You create your own carbon market within your own economy. It's totally possible to do. And you don't have to be, there's no compliance needed. You just show leadership.
Yeah.
That's what that is. That is standing up and going, oh, we're going to do better.
I've probably come a bit of a way. Like my philosophy was, call it 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, as long as China and India are on the planet, why should we bother doing anything? Because, you know, the drop in the ocean, stuff like that. However, the more I thought about this stuff, Australia is like, I'm just looking here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 7th in the world GDP. There is that question of leadership. And with a lot of different social things, right, and other, like we might look to another country for what they're doing that's radical in education because they've tried that. Oh, it's working. We can do that as well. So
yep.
I just think it is a leadership thing.
It's a leadership thing. Like, and it's so hard. It's so hard to do because a lot of our economy is underpinned by it. But what the reality is that the Earth can't take any more new coal and gas projects. The International Energy Agency has said this, and they're not some wokest leftist organization. It's the International Energy Agency. Their headquarters is in Switzerland. Like, these are Germans who don't muck around. And they have said, you know, the Earth can't, you know, take any more of new coal and gas projects, and we need to rapidly move out of these.
Call me a righty boomer, but why isn't nuclear a serious consideration on the table?
Maybe it should be.
You know?
Right now in Australia, it is so expensive.
Yeah.
So to develop nuclear, to make nuclear and to distribute nuclear and to deal with post-processing of nuclear, it's heinously expensive. So right now, dollar for dollar, nuclear I think is like 30 cents per kilowatt or 50 cents per kilowatt. And with solar and wind, you're looking at 5 cents per kilowatt.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like it's seriously a cost.
Cost benefit, yeah.
Yeah, like you could rapidly accelerate solar and wind backed with storage, batteries.
So when they say solar and wind doesn't cater for the baseload power, is that right-wing boomer talk?
It is, yeah. So baseload is coal industry talk for...
Because batteries would solve that.
Batteries solve it, yeah. And we see that in South Australia with the battery backup system.
Yeah.
And there's this really super interesting experiment run by a lot of big energy companies at the moment with community-based batteries. So every few streets, they'll have a smaller battery and they will be feeding in clean electricity from the houses to these community
batteries. I saw that
community
on,
batteries.
Yeah, I saw that on the on 7:30 a few weeks ago. I think they did a story about it.
Yeah, and there's more of those growing. So Energy Australia are looking at pole-based batteries, big batteries that sit on street poles.
Australia has the biggest adaptation in rooftop solar in the world, I think, for homes.
Yeah, and so that's extraordinary. And then the other thing is transport of electricity. So currently the grid is really inefficient and it's really only made for one-way simplex transmission of electricity. So what folks are really working hard on right now is something called digital grids and virtual power plants. And this Labor government has invested in the last budget tons of money into making those grids smarter to be able to send and receive electricity from a disparate array of sources to where it's needed quicker. And that's exciting. So one of the fascinating things is Australia is this big place, right? And so if it's sunny on one side of the country and it's not sunny on the other, you can push electricity to wherever it is needed. So with enough solar, with enough wind, you can have this amazing distributed electricity system where you don't have to worry about if the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing, oh, how do we get electricity? Mm. That's my Peter Dutton impression.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. So it's we're the really interesting, fun,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
fun part in electricity solving that problem. So the electricity problem in Australia, so the, let me just quickly back up for emissions. Biggest emissions problem is electricity production. That's huge emissions. Then the next is transport and the next is agriculture. So the electricity problem is slowly being solved and the emissions from electricity is slowly going down because of the rapid development of renewables, not just in Australia but everywhere. And then transport's the next problem. So electrifying transport is going to be the next big problem, and then electrifying airlines is going to be hard.
And well, it's the weight thing.
The weight is just too hard at the moment. But for smaller planes, it's pretty good. And then SAF is something, sustainable airline fuel, is something that folks are working on, but it could be a delay and distraction from actual alternatives. And then agriculture is going to be a real toughie. So that's methane emissions. You may have heard about the miracle seaweed feed that cows can eat to reduce their methane.
No.
So
maybe I need some myself.
Yeah, so there's awesome seaweed farmers.
Wow.
What they're doing is they're building seaweed feed for cattle and livestock, and they've worked out that by feeding seaweed to cattle and livestock, it reduces their methane emissions by like 80%.
So wow.
It's an extraordinary kind of...
ag tech, we call it.
Ag tech, yeah. So there are these problems that are slowly being solved one by one. The electricity one is well on the way. Mm.
There's often, and I know everyone will be talking about Dan's money story, but you get the vibe of what he's about. And we're just having a chat.
I'm a comedian, by the way, so I'm really fun. Really, I hope you found that extremely hilarious. Extremely hilarious and, conversation and about emissions.
And everyone's probably like, this is supposed to be a money podcast. What are you doing? And if you're still listening, thank you. And if you stop listening after the break, that's okay because we've already served up the ads. But interestingly, like you hear the thing about let the market do it, government needs to do intervention. It can be both. Like that ag tech thing.
Yes.
That wasn't a government agency mandated thing. It was someone going
as an entrepreneur.
Yes.
And they get money from CSIRO and government funding from time to time, but that's somebody cracking a problem and being really smart with it. And if that solution can be scaled, that's the exciting thing. So what government needs to do is kind of encourage people to take that up, and they can do that through carrot and stick, you know.
Any other big issues that you want to solve in the last 10 minutes?
In the last 10 minutes, I've got a wedgie, so I'll need to stand up and you know, work that out myself.
Yeah, you need to do that.
No.
So just because I do want to talk about your show and the tour you've got coming up, but just to bring it home with your own money.
Yeah.
You're putting super aside, you're saving, you're a bit cash heavy at the moment for the home deposit, medical stuff or whatever. Are you doing any other... I'll call it superficial investing. Like, do you have a little ETF or?
I do. So I've got my spaceship.
Oh, that would have had a ding in the last.
If you have a look at it, it's pretty shocking.
Why did you choose spaceship to start with?
I
just like to doing these live autopsies.
I don't know why. I just saw it and it looked like an easy thing to do. And for the first 3 years of doing it, I was like, this is awesome.
Going to the moon, baby.
I am crushing it.
Diamond hands.
And then the last 2 years, I was like, whoa, 30% knocked out of it. So I took all of it out and then started again. So I put about $100 a week in it.
Yeah.
Now, after like culling it, I was like, can I take that money out? That's going in the house deposit.
Yeah.
So that's now up to about 10 grand.
Yeah.
So I don't really worry about it. And I have a superhero account.
Oh, I use superhero.
Yeah.
So why would you not just use superhero, for example? Why do both?
Well, I started out with spaceship.
Sure.
And it was just an easy set and forget.
And what are you investing in with superhero?
I invest in things I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
So I buy a lot of green tech. I buy a lot of critical minerals like lithium and stuff like that.
Yeah. And do you do that via ETFs or direct?
I do it direct for the companies I'm reading up about or come across.
Yep.
Or I might interview the CEO and be like, oh, fuck, I'll put $200 in that guy.
I like all these guys on it. Yeah.
This guy's smart.
Yeah.
This woman's smart. I'll drop money in that. And I've got some money in like Vanguard in Superhero as well. I did buy a whole stack of AGL shares in Superhero so I could vote on the board stuff as an activist investor, and that worked out great. So I was so surprised. I don't know how much money I had. I think I might have had $800 of AGL shares, but it reached a point where they were sending me emails to vote in the AGM, and I'm like, great, awesome. I can actually affect radical change for Australia's emissions.
Yeah.
And it was a really great result. So
do you think the individual can move the needle?
So there's a few things you can do as an individual, like knowing where your power is. Mm. So being an AGL shareholder, you can move the needle. So by getting a climate activist, a climate active board in AGL, that is 8% of Australia's emissions. That's huge. So if you can pivot that company radically to be a renewable energy only company and they close down their coal plants, that is megatons of emissions that will no longer be in the atmosphere. And all this conversation is about climate change is putting molecules of trapped sunlight from rocks and burning it and putting it in the sky. The less we could do of that, then the better the planet will be. That's it. You don't need to, anything else to know about.
Okay. The ozone layer, it's closing. That's good, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Did we do that or was it?
So we did that.
Yeah.
So
I'm talking on behalf of humanity here, of course.
We opened it and we closed it. Yeah. It's
just an like, open shut case.
You know, it's like Ghostbusters when they open the portal and then they close it again. Yeah. So back in the 90s, HFCs.
The polystyrene type.
Gases in canisters.
Yes.
In refrigerants and stuff like that. It was deemed that these were bad for the ozone layer. And so there was worldwide policy to get rid of these gases. We got rid of those gases and the ozone layer is slowly repairing.
The only problem was it's right above our head.
That's it. Yeah. And
I got my ozone melanoma on my leg cut out.
Oh, no. Well, there is one difference between you and me is I'm a lot browner than you.
Yeah.
So the melanin protects me a little bit. So look, that's an example of where global policy on environmental issues has worked to a large degree, whereas everything else is a little bit more polemic because the fossil fuel industry has the whole world's economies captured, you know. And at the moment, with the war in Ukraine, they're using it as a great excuse to make crazy super profits. So it's a weird place to be where the whole world is kind of beholden to a few companies.
Yeah, I actually saw or heard, and this could be wrong, but go with me, Europe is paying Russia $1 billion a day for energy, which is basically paying for the war.
I don't know about that. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, anyway, it's wild.
I don't know. I mean, Ukraine and Europe were heavily reliant on gas from Russia. For so long. So, but across last winter, I know Europe was very good at storing gas and keeping gas stored. And because they had quite a mild winter, they actually didn't need all the gas they stored.
Okay, so coal bad, natural gas good-er?
No. Natural gas worse for a shorter period of time.
Right.
So coal emissions from coal bad and they last for about 150 years in the atmosphere.
Yep.
So right now there's particles in the atmosphere that were burned 150 years ago.
Wow.
And still in the atmosphere from the choo-choo trains of yesteryear.
Wow.
But gas from methane, which is natural gas, it's methane. It's 88% more potent as a greenhouse gas, so it traps a lot more heat in the atmosphere, but for a shorter period, for about 12 years. So it's much more intense for a shorter period of time. The gas from your stir fry is still up in the atmosphere from last night, but the gas from your stir fry from 20 years ago is no longer around. So it's bad.
Mm.
Yeah. People will say it's good because it doesn't burn brown, but what it does do is it does capture heat 88% more than carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
That's methane. So when we think about natural gas, it's methane. Yeah. That's what you're burning. You're putting methane in your house.
Right.
Wow. And the biggest thing about natural gas is the fugitive emissions. So that is emissions that escape between the pump house and your house just through pipes and cracks and stuff like that. Like tons of emissions.
Mm. No, it's fascinating and I don't know, I just personally like to learn about all this stuff and, do what I can to make it better.
Yeah, well, you know, you have a great podcast and that's good, you know.
Well, I think, we can use our platform for good. Someone accused me for being too woke. so I don't want to be accused of being too woke, but it's just good to use the platform for good. And actually, while I got you, because and the reason I want to ask you these things is just from a personal learning because you're in news, like your podcast is reading news, right? And making light and entertainment and all that newsy stuff.
Yep.
The voice to parliament that's coming up with the referendum.
Yeah.
You hear people saying, vote no, vote no. Like, why would you vote no if there's no harm done by a yes vote?
That's a really good question.
Right.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I don't know why you do that. Essentially, there isn't any harm. Like it's a group of people who want to advocate a First Nations perspective on policy to have their say about what happens to them, where traditionally they have never really had a significant sway or...
A voice, if you will.
Mm. And the reason, look, the reason why it's got to be constitutional is so it can't be removed, because there have been bodies in the past that have been made, but then successive governments have...
moved it with legislation.
Deleted them out of existence. Yep. So this is a chance to rectify that, put in the constitution so it can't actually be removed.
So in practicalities, for those who have heard what it's about, it basically means there is a body or a group of First Nations people that the government of the day can consult about issues.
Yeah, that are related to First Nations issues. So 25 to 30 people from all around the states. Each major state has two that represent, you know, urban points of view, and one representing regional areas, and they come together to consult on issues that are pertinent to them. And I think it's really cool. I think it's a great way to kind of move together as a country, and it's a great way to progress this country further down the route of treaty. You know, as a way to reconcile differences between where Australia is now and what has happened in the past. And I think this is an interesting and compelling first step to a treaty and then truth telling. And I think the movement is super interesting. There are a lot of First Nations people who are skeptical of it, and so they should be. And there's a lot of grassroots First Nations folks who want just to jump straight to treaty. And I think that's great too. I don't know whether Australia's ready to jump straight to a treaty. I think it's really ambitious, but I really admire the movement for asking for that. I think it's compelling. I think it's really compelling, and I don't want to speak for Aboriginal people, but as a white person, as a settler living on colonised land, I think it's really good.
Mm. Well, I just think if it does no harm, what's the problem?
Exactly, yeah. It shouldn't do any harm. You know, and politicians can take the advice or do like what they do with most advice.
Well, they're not bound to the advice.
No, the only thing they're bound to is donors from fossil fuel companies.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get the money while the money's good. Gosh.
So the way our parliament is set up, the way our representatives are set up, lobbying does have a huge amount of sway on the Hill. Like, you can register to become a lobbyist and you get a...
You know what we need? We need someone to come in and drain our swamp.
Well, what if I told you, Glenn James, that Canberra wasn't initially a swamp? They made a swamp to put the capital. They said, let's dam this river and make a swamp.
Canberra, what a place. What a place. Well, we've had a bit of a yarn. Look, I know it was a bit of a different episode today, everyone, and... You know, we did try and touch on a bit of the person behind the Rational Fear microphone and the person, but hey, we had a chat. That's for sure.
This sounds like a C-grade podcast, the way you're selling it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's just keep this moving. Tell us about your live shows.
Yeah, we're doing Rational Fear live around Australia. We've got the Adelaide Fringe coming up in a couple of days, March 4 at the Adelaide Fringe. We've got a great show. Gabby Bolt, Alice Fraser, Andrew Hanson from The Chaser. I think we've even got the Attorney General of South Australia on the show, which is really great. We're going to talk more about The Voice at that show. Then we've got Melbourne Comedy Festival, April 2nd, Grace Tame, That's What I Reckon, Sammy Shah, and Vijay Rajan, and a whole bunch of others, Lewis Hobber also. And then we've got our show at World Science Festival in Brisbane, March 26th.
Vegas.
Yeah. Mark Humphreys, Lewis Hobber, Mel Buddle, and we've got this woman who is a Brisbane native who worked on the JWST, the James Webb Space Telescope, and she is currently the head of the Exoplanet Habitat for NASA, and she's going to be on the show. So it's really exciting. I'm super excited to have her.
So what type of person what are the demos that listen to a Rational Fear?
Not very many, as I explained.
There's like, eight
so
people.
A terrible audience.
Yeah, yeah. So of the eight people, like, is it, what age is it mainly?
I think we're 30 to 50.
Yeah, right.
And It's people who are interested in comedy, politics, and climate change, largely.
Does the ABC own your podcast?
No, you know, and I'd here's the thing, Glenn. I'd quite happily sell it to someone.
Yeah.
So I don't have to maintain this business. I just like being lit and amplified. Yeah. That's what I like to do. That's my business.
I did an April Fool's last year in my Facebook group that the podcast is changing and I've actually sold and I sold to Afterpay. And it's my phone lit up.
That's great.
Like,
all your
amazing
talk about consumer debt.
Hey, I can be bought, baby. I can be bought.
I can be bought too. And if Chevron has the right price, exactly, I will charge a carbon premium.
And I wonder how I could spin it. Like, if Afterpay are like, oh, we want to buy your podcast, I'd be like, oh, no, I can't. But how much? I mean, maybe if we do something like if they gave me like $10 million, we donate $5 to charity. Right. Offset it.
The Glenn James Foundation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's all fine. I'm not going anywhere, everyone, to some people's disgust.
Well, you know, Glenn, I love your podcast. I love your team. I love the voices you have on all of your shows. They're so good.
Mm.
And they helped me. Listening to your podcast relentlessly helped me get back onto a financial footing.
Well, I just want to be the oranges at halftime. You know, you go out there, you're living your life, you come halftime, recharge, encouragement, focus, get back out on the field.
Yeah, now I'm financially stable. I'll probably never listen to another podcast again of yours.
No. Someone said to me at a cafe last year, they're like, oh, hey, I used to listen to your podcast. And my friend laughed. And I'm like, he's like, no, we bought our house and then I was done. I'm like, awesome. That's what it's about.
That's great. That's so good. That's so good.
Come in, use me, abuse me, and piss off.
Does your title, My Millennial Money, as the main podcast, really aid you? Have you considered losing the millennial?
Yeah, I had toyed for a while about changing the name to More Than Money.
Right.
Because everything's about, it's more than money, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's never about the money. But the problem I've got, you know, you live by the sword, die by the sword, all that stuff. The brand My Millennial Money, it's too strong in market.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Look, I don't know. It does age us a little bit, but we've got, you know, I don't really talk millennial. Like, I guess I'll say I talk millennial because I am a millennial.
Yeah.
But we've got Gen Z listening. We've got 18, 17-year-olds listening. We've got, well, they were listening before I was saying I was a righty boomer. Like, we do have people over 55 who are listening.
Yeah.
So the name doesn't really say what's on the label because there's actually, with money, the same concepts apply to every age. Spend less than you earn, invest the rest. Spend less than you earn, invest the rest.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And that's the same for someone who's 57 still working or starting their career.
Yep.
So there you have it.
Yeah.
Dan Illich.
And can I say the brand is strong in this house? I mean, you've got My Millennial Post. There's pictures of you everywhere in this house.
I know.
And I love your car. It's got a My Millennial bumper sticker on the back window.
It's got all the goods. It's got all the goods. You should see my bedside table.
You can't see this when you're listening, but Glenn James has My Millennial Money microphones in the brand colours of My Millennial Money.
Got to live it and breathe it. And this media wall here, that was supposed to be the colour, but the printer didn't get it right.
Yeah, that's it. That's good. I like it.
Anyway.
It looks like a school uniform.
It really does. Dan Illich is the host of the A Rational Fear podcast. Give it a like, give it a subscribe, all that stuff.
I promise more jokes on my podcast.
And he will be funny.
Yeah.
And if you're listening, I might come on one day and have a yarn about something.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast. My Millennial Money supports a variety of charities, and we encourage you to consider giving as part of your overall financial strategy. If you would like some giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to mymillennial.money/charities for more info. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.